This is the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we honor the year in music for 1987, along with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 1987. We look at another nominee for this year's class into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, plus our Spotlight Hall isn't a hall per se. It's the Library of Congress National Recording Registry in Washington, D.C. Before we get going with the podcast, like everyone tells you, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you'll know when these podcast episodes drop, which is usually every Thursday. Now, on to this week's episode. The year was 1987. In music, alt-rock continued its journey from college radio to the mainstream, thanks in part to the influence of MTV. Bands like Husker Du, Dinosaur Jr., and Sonic Youth began to break through a little, and if you hung out in your local record store, then you might have heard the rumblings of some bands in Seattle called Soundgarden and the Melvins. The hair band era got jump-started by Bon Jovi, whose second album, Slippery When Wet, became a mega-selling album and unleashed a ton of copycat bands. Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue was clinically dead after a heroin overdose but was revived by paramedics. U2 released the Joshua Tree album, Michael Jackson released Bad, Prince released Sign of the Times, Pink Floyd released their first album without Roger Waters called A Momentary Lapse of Reason, Def Leppard released Hysteria, and Guns N' Roses released Appetite for Destruction. George Michael's Faith, INXS's biggest selling album Kick, and the Dirty Dancing soundtrack both came out late in the year, with the success of those albums mainly being felt in 1988. MTV Europe started in 1987, as did Kylie Minogue's career when her version of the song The Locomotion became a big hit. Whitney Houston became the first female solo artist to debut at number one on the Billboard Albums chart when her sophomore album Whitney was released. Elton John had throat surgery that left his voice lower. The Ka-Single, or cassette single if you will, made its debut in 1987. The first Ka-Single to be released was Bryan Adams' song Heat of the Night. Another big music business event happened on November 18, 1987, when CBS Records was bought by Sony for $2 billion. Bands that formed in 1987 included Alison Krauss and Union Station, Alice in Chains, Animal Logic, Third Base, 808 State, The Bullet Boys, Danger Danger, Danzig, Diggable Planets, Digital Underground, After 7, DC Talk, Delirium, Bad English, Blues Traveler, Femme Fatale, Fugazi, Calloway, Gin Blossoms, Green Day, Guy, Giant, Inner City, Jagged Edge, The Jungle Brothers, Kid and Play, The Jesus Lizard, Meat Beat Manifesto, Mars, The Lunatics, The Roots, Ugly Kid Joe, and a little band known as Nirvana. Bands that called it quits, at least until the inevitable reunions or took an official hiatus, included the Bay City Rollers, Baltimora, Berlin, the Mary Jane Girls, Modern English, Nana, the Smiths, GTR, General Public, Husker Du, the Violent Femmes, Twisted Sister, and the aforementioned Mars, who put out one album, had a worldwide Eurodance hit called Pump Up the Volume, Dance, Dance, and then broke up, all in one year. Bands that actually did the reunion thing in 1987 for longer than a year included the Doobie Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and Prism. The top 10 best-selling albums of 1987, according to Billboard magazine, were Bon Jovi's Slippery When Wet, Paul Simon's Graceland, Beastie Boys' License to Ill, Bruce Hornsby and the Range's The Way It Is, Janet Jackson's Control, U2's The Joshua Tree, Huey Lewis and the News's 4, Cinderella's Night Songs, Anita Baker's Rapture, and Genesis with Invisible Touch. The top 10 best-selling singles, according to Billboard magazine, were The Bangles' Walk Like an Egyptian, Heart's Alone, Gregory Abbott's Shake You Down, Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody, Starship's Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, Robbie Neville's C'est La Vie, Whitesnake's Here I Go Again, Bruce Hornsby and the Range's The Way It Is, Bob Seger's Shakedown, and Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer. In country music, Randy Travis had the biggest album of the year with Always and Forever. Other artists with big albums included Alabama, Hank Williams Jr., George Strait, Reba McEntire, The Judds, Restless Heart, Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt with Emmylou Harris, and Dwight Yoakam. Artists with big country singles included Randy Travis with Forever and Ever, Amen, Michael Johnson, The Judds, Dan Seals, Reba McEntire, Merle Haggard, Highway 101, The Forster Sisters, Roseanne Cash, and Ricky Van Shelton. Hip-hop continued creeping up into the mainstream as LL Cool J, Boogie Down Productions, Eric B. and Rakim, and Public Enemy made noise. LL's second album, Bigger and Deafer, was released, which had the first hip-hop ballad to become a hit, I Need Love. And it also had his iconic song, I'm Bad. Public Enemy debuted with their album, Yo Bum Rush the Show. Cool Moe D had How You Like Me Now. Heavy D and the Boys had Mr. Big Stuff. Eric B. and Rakim had the legendary Paid in Full and Move the Crowd. Ice-T had the album Rhyme Pays. Boogie Down Productions had Criminal Minded. Audio 2 released Top Billin' and Eazy-E released the song Boys in the Hood. Dance music on the charts was still overpopulated by pop and R&B artists like Madonna, along with Jody Watley, ABC, George Michael, and Janet and Michael Jackson. There were some big one-hit wonder dance tracks like Yellow's Oh Yeah, that was from the Ferris Bueller's Day Off soundtrack, and also Paul Lekakis's classically titled song, Boom Boom Boom, Let's Go Back to My Room. Seriously, that was the title. Generation X would now like to apologize to you for that one, although I'm not going to lie that the song is actually pretty catchy. Sorry. Anywho, if you were in Chicago or Detroit, then you were probably hitting the underground clubs like the Warehouse in Chicago to listen to two forms of dance music that were going through the club scene at that time, house and techno music. House, of course, being named after the Warehouse, not Europe. Europe. If you were in Great Britain, though, speaking of, then you already felt the tremors of EDM as Steve Silk Hurley's song Jack Your Body became the first house track to hit number one on the British charts. Also, freestyle group Exposé broke through to the mainstream when their song Come Go With Me hit number one, while Company B hit number one with Fascinated. 1987 was also the year that Kraftwerk hit the top of the dance charts in America. In Latin music, the biggest artists of the year were Jose Jose, Juan Gabriel, Braulia, Emmanuel, Jose Feliciano, Los Buques, Los Tigres del Norte, Little Joe, not to be confused with Fat Joe, Vicente Fernandez, and Los Yonix. Musicals or revivals of musicals that were around in 1987 included Cabaret, Dreamgirls, Into the Woods, Les Miserables, and Anything Goes. Musical films that came out in 1987 included Dirty Dancing and La Bamba, about the short but brilliant life of singer Ritchie Valens. Musical artists who were born in 1987 included DJ Afrojack, rappers Meek Mill, Kendrick Lamar, Wiz Khalifa, Bow Wow, Justina Valentine, Jay Park, and Dougie Pointer of McFly, singers Frank Ocean, Aaron Carter, Diana DeGarmo, Kevin Jonas of the Jonas Brothers, Marcus Mumford of Mumford & Sons, Dan Reynolds of Imagine Dragons, Brendan Urie of Panic at the Disco, Tyler Hubbard of Florida Georgia Line, Dan Myers of Dan and Shay, Kesha, and Jesse McCartney. Musical artists who passed away in 1987 included Paul Butterfield of the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, the founder of the New York Blue Note Jazz Nightclub, Alfred Lion, entertainer extraordinaire Mr. Liberace, guitarist Bola Sette, singer Dean Paul Martin Jr., French singer Dalida, cellist Jacqueline Dupree, bassist Jaco Pastorius of the group Weather Report, drummer Buddy Rich, Maria Augusta Von Trapp of the Von Trapp family, who inspired the Sound of Music, Singer Maxine Sullivan, drummer Carlton Barrett, and guitarist Peter Tosh of Bob Marley and the Wailers, who was murdered in a home invasion. In award ceremonies for the music of 1987, U2 won Album of the Year at the Grammy Awards for The Joshua Tree, while Paul Simon won Record of the Year for Graceland. Somewhere Out There from An American Tale movie soundtrack won Song of the Year, and Jody Watley won Best New Artist. At the MTV Video Music Awards, Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer won Music Video of the Year. At the American Music Awards for the music of 1987, Whitney Houston, Paul Simon, and Bon Jovi were the big winners. Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, and LaVert were the big winners at the Soul Train Music Awards. Kenny Rogers, Whitney Houston, and Bon Jovi won the music categories at the People's Choice Awards. The Billboard Music Awards, by the way, did not start until 1990. At the Eurovision Singing Contest, which was held that year in Brussels, Belgium, Johnny Logan from Ireland won for the song Hold Me Now. Hank Williams Jr. won Entertainer of the Year at the Academy of Country Music Awards, and he also won Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards. Sting won Album of the Year for Nothing Like the Sun, and Rick Astley won Single of the Year for Never Gonna Give You Up at the Brit Awards. Bryan Adams won Entertainer of the Year at the Juno Awards. Icehouse won Album of the Year for Man of Colors, and Midnight Oil won Song of the Year for Beds Are Burning at the ARIA Music Awards. At the Tony Awards, Les Miserables won Best Musical, and All My Sons won Best Revival of a Musical. Musically, at the Academy Awards, The Last Emperor won Best Film Score, while I've Had the Time of My Life from the Dirty Dancing soundtrack won Best Song. The Pulitzer Prize for Music was won by John Harbison for The Flight into Egypt. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony was held on January 21, 1987, at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. At the ceremony, record executives Ahmet Erdogan, Jerry Wexler, and Leonard Chess, along with record producers Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, were all inducted into the non-performers category. In the performers category, Aretha Franklin became the first woman to be inducted into the hall. Other performers who were inducted into that category included the Coasters, Bo Diddley, Marvin Gaye, B.B. King, Bill Haley, Roy Orbison, Carl Perkins, Clyde McFadder, Smokey Robinson, Muddy Waters, Jackie Wilson, Big Joe Turner, Rick Nelson, and Eddie Cochran, Louis Jordan, T-Bone Walker, and this next artist were all inducted into the early influencers category. Hank Williams Sr. was born on September 17, 1923, in Butler County, Alabama. Hank's guitar style was influenced by three guys, Roy Acuff, Ernest Tubb, and Rufus Payne, who Hank took guitar lessons from when he moved to Georgiana, Alabama, when he was a teenager. Williams eventually ended up in Montgomery, Alabama, where he ended up hosting a radio show. He also got a backup band for the show, but once World War II broke out, he lost a lot of the band to military service. He ended up getting fired from his radio gig, so he went and started recording songs, first for Sterling Records and then for MGM Records. Slowly but surely, he started getting popular, and in 1948, he joined the Louisiana Hayride radio show, which was the precursor to the Grand Ole Opry. He actually tried to join the Opry, but was rejected, then later invited to join, but soon thereafter was fired from the Opry. Which brings us to what ended up being his Achilles heel. Hank had a very serious drinking problem, along with prescription drug abuse to deal with a back problem. His habitual drinking led to him missing shows, then getting fired from that radio show I was talking about earlier, along with his Grand Ole Opry gig that I was just talking about. The gifted songwriter who influenced artists like Elvis Presley and the Rolling Stones and wrote and or recorded such classics such as Your Cheatin' Heart, Move It On Over, and Hey Good Lookin' was finally done in by his demons. On New Year's Eve, 1952, Williams was being driven to a concert in Canton, Ohio. On the way, he began to get sick from all the alcohol and chloral hydrate he was drinking in the back seat of a Cadillac. I mean, seriously, who drinks chloral hydrate? My goodness. After getting treatment from a doctor, he got back in the car and the trip proceeded. However, in the early morning hours of New Year's Day, 1953, Williams died in the back seat of that Cadillac. The official reason was complications brought on by alcohol abuse. Hank Williams Sr. was 29 years old. Hank Williams Sr. released two albums in his lifetime. The first was Hank Williams Sings, which was released on November 9, 1951. The second was Moanin' the Blues in 1952. After he died, there were two studio albums released in 1953, three albums in 1954, one album 31 years after that in 1985, two in 2008, and two in 2009. The guy was pretty busy recording for a guy who was actually dead all that time. Still, Hank Williams Sr. is one of the most influential artists in country music ever. His son Hank Williams Jr., by the way, also became a country music legend in his own right and is about to be inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. And that is why I kept saying senior, so as not to confuse you and make you think that that was Junior who was doing all that heavy drinking and whatnot. Presented for induction by 2005 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee Seymour Stein, Hank Williams Sr. inducted into the Early Influencers category in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 1987. And we will put some of Hank Williams Sr.'s greatest hits onto this week's podcast playlist, the link to which is in the show notes. Before we go any further, we'd like to tell you that there is now a Music History in Depth podcast where we go more in depth on a few of the events that happened in music history for that particular week. The Music History in Depth podcast drops every Tuesday on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast from, as does our Music History Today podcast, which goes over the daily events in music history. The Music History Today podcast drops daily, including weekends, on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to this podcast. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame released its nominees for the Performers category for this year's induction into the next class for the Hall. This list does not, however, include who they decide will be inducted into the other categories like Musical Excellence or Early Influencer. This list is strictly for the performers, and it is as follows. Mary J. Blige, Mariah Carey, Cher, The Dave Matthews Band, Eric B. and Rakim, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Jane's Addiction, Kool & the Gang, Lenny Kravitz, Oasis, Sinead O'Connor, Ozzy Osbourne, Sade, and A Tribe Called Quest. The good news is that you get to vote for who gets inducted, as the fan vote is a small part of the total vote. So go to rockhall.com to vote. That is rockhall.com. We will put the link in the show notes for you on that. You can still vote for up to 7 artists once a day, every day through April 26th, but you better hurry. It's already at this point about 2 weeks away from closing shop for the year. For the past couple of months, we made the case for you to vote for every artist to be inducted, so check out our last 7 episodes for the other nominees, but we are now down to the final one, and we are going to cover the Dave Matthews Band. To the tail of the tape we always go. The Dave Matthews Band released 10 studio albums, 96 live albums, I'll explain that one in a minute, 3 compilation albums, and 2 EPs. Of those, all of the studio albums have hit the top 20, with his 1994 debut album, Under the Table and Dreaming, charting the lowest at number 11. Their next lowest album hit number 5, they had 2 hit number 2, and 7 straight albums hit number 1. The vast majority of the 96 live albums were official slash unofficial bootlegs or fan club downloads. The reason for that, I will mention in the influence part in about a minute. The group also released 36 singles. Of those, 32 hit the top 40 on various American charts, with 24 of those 32 going top 10, including 9 of those 24 hitting number 1. As far as the group's influence goes, they are one of the bands that took the jam band torch from the Grateful Dead and Government Mule and took it forward, along with the group Phish, who will hopefully get into the hall someday soon. Their concerts are legendary, and much like going to a Springsteen concert, they have a church rally style to them. They started out being successful on their own with their constant touring and business building, and when the record labels came calling, the band didn't need them, so they were able to dictate their own terms. When they saw that some bootleggers were selling expensive, low-quality copies of their concerts, they were able to combat that by putting out good copies of their concerts, and that's why they have so many live albums. They're one of the few artists who combine chart success and critical success with great performances and lots of awards. Honestly, they should have been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a long time ago. Hopefully, this will be the year that they finally get in. Remember, go to rockhall.com to vote. That's rockhall.com. And like I said, we'll put that link in the show notes for you. You can vote for up to 7 artists once a day, every day, for the next few weeks at least, through April 26th. And also, as an added bonus, in case I almost forgot, we will put the Dave Matthews Band's hits onto this week's podcast playlist as well. The link to which is for that as well is in the show notes. Each week in this spot, we highlight a different musical Hall of Fame or museum, since there's a bunch more than just the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's, for instance, the Country Music Hall of Fame, the Blues Hall of Fame, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, the Grammy Museum, among many others. But this week, we are going to talk about one that isn't a hall per se. However, to me, it's probably the most important. The Library of Congress, aside from being a place in the movie All the President's Men, is the nation's library. Established in April of 1800, it has more than 38 million books, 14 million photographs, 70 million manuscripts, and 5.5 million maps. From a musical standpoint, it's important for a couple of reasons. The first is that it has over 8 million pieces of sheet music and over 3.5 million recordings. The second and more important reason is what it does with certain recordings. Since the passage of the National Recording Preservation Act of 2000, the library has developed a registry to preserve and protect certain pieces of music and other recordings that are considered historically relevant. That's a pretty high honor, knowing that your song or album is so important to the nation that it needs to be preserved forever. This is a pretty high-class list you're joining here. Some of these recordings are actually speeches or radio shows from yesteryear. For instance, the earliest recorded version of Abbott and Costello's classic Who's On First comedy sketch, along with Orson Welles's War of the Worlds radio broadcast and Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech are all in the registry, as are the first recordings on cylinders that Thomas Edison used to show off the phonograph at an exhibition. The first official class was in 2002. There were 50 recordings that were declared important. All of the above-mentioned recordings were in that first class. Fats Domino had a string of hits in the 1950s and was one of the highest-paid performers at one time, along with being one of the best-selling black rock and roll performers of the 1950s. A lot of people tend to forget about him because of the shadows that Chuck Berry and Little Richard cast way back in the day before Elvis burst onto the scene. People also forget that Fats was a rebel. He purposely had both black and white audiences mixing together, which was extremely unheard of back in the 1950s. In fact, there were 4 riots at his shows. Now, one riot, he and his band had to jump out of a window when police started using tear gas. Race mixing, alcohol, 1950s America. Bad combination at that time, which is why what Fats did helped to break down so many doors before Elvis and Pat Boone took the music to the mainstream, basically. Like many black performers back in the days, Fats' music was taken and performed by white performers who made more money off of it than Fats did. Some of those performers even made their own careers out of watering down Fats' music. Hi, Pat Boone. With songs like I'm Walking, Ain't That a Shame, The Fat Man, and this song that the National Recording Registry inducted into the National Recording Registry. Blueberry Hill was written by Vincent Rose, Al Lewis, and Larry Stock. It originally was not a rock and roll song, but a jazz band standard. In the 1940s and 50s, it was recorded by Louis Armstrong, who took it to the top 40 on the singles chart, Gene Krupa, and Tommy Dorsey, just to name a few. The Glenn Miller Orchestra took the song to number 1 with their recordings. In 1940 alone, it had been recorded 4 different times. It was originally recorded even earlier than that, in 1936 by, of all people, Gene Autry, for his movie The Singing Cowboy. By the time Fats got it into his head to record the song in 1956, he was already an established rock and roll star. Ain't That a Shame had crossed over into the mainstream in 1954. Still, when he got around to recording his version of Blueberry Hill for Imperial Records in June of 1956 at the Masters Recorder Studio in Hollywood, California, almost everybody thought the session was a complete bust. For starters, no one knew the song that well. Second, no one found any sheet music for the song, despite the number of times the song had been recorded by then, so no one really learned the song, which is why no one really knew the song. So they tried to record this song 3 different times, and by all accounts, the session was a complete failure, except that there were at least a few good parts to work with. Producer David Bartholomew wasn't even sure why they were recording the song in the first place, since it had already been done to death. So with that kind of attitude going into this whole thing, this wasn't really going to work out too well. Except that it did. Sort of. Record label owner Lou Chud believed in the song so much that he had sound engineer Bunny Robin put together the best parts of the 3 tries at the song and just cobble them all together and make it into 1 actual version. So, that actual cobbled up version of Blueberry Hill came out as a B-side to Fats Domino's song Honey Child. They were originally going to go with Honey Child because Fats had performed Honey Child for the movie Shake, Rattle, and Roll, and that was supposed to be Fats' next big hit. Instead, Blueberry Hill started getting played on radio stations. Fats also performed it on November 18, 1956 on the Ed Sullivan TV show, which got it to mainstream America, who ate it up. Blueberry Hill became a huge hit, going to number 1 and staying there for 5 weeks. Despite the fact that it had been recorded a bunch of times in the 1940s, Fats' version took an awful lot of flack. The lyric, I Found My Thrill on Blueberry Hill, was of course referring to sex, which I guess was okay for jazz bands and jazz songs, but not for scary black rock and roll music that was corrupting the white youth of America. Literally, that's what people were thinking back then. You have to remember the times. Rock was still considered black music back then and was being banned in an awful lot of places. And when I say black music, they were using a different word, begins with the letter N. I'm not going to say it here, but you get the idea. It was the 1950s, after all. In the end, though, All of the controversy really didn't matter for Fats. It became his biggest hit and is now considered a rock and roll classic. Plus, as an added bonus, it became Richie Cunningham's theme song whenever he had a date with a girl that night on the TV show Happy Days. Yes, I just dated myself. I'm sorry. Not sorry. Fats Domino's version of the jazz band song Blueberry Hill, inducted into the Library of Congress National Recording Registry in 2005. And yes, we will absolutely have that one on the Music Podcast playlist, so you can hear that and also more of Fats Domino's music because it is legendary. And it, of course, will have the link in the show notes for you. The Music Halls of Fame podcast is part of the Music History Today Network, which can be found under Music History Today on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and also on our YouTube page under Music History Today. Thank you very much for listening.